interest rates were higher back then. I think it was that FHA 203K loan. It was somewhere in like the 6.5 range, which was high back then. And it was the same kind of thought periods that we had now. It's like, man, interest rates are too high. Home prices are too high. It was all the same type of talk as it was right now.
Welcome to the House Hacking Success Podcast. This is Drew. I'm here with Brad. We're going to talk about Brad. What do you got going on? And I know you got some updates in your life. You've been hustling real hard in the real estate side of things. And we got some great news about Fannie Mae loan, 5% down on multifamily. So we're going to cover that today too.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's been a little bit. It's been a busy season for me for the last really few years, but I'm excited to update everyone on some of the things we've been doing. And I think now more than ever, house hacking is going to be intriguing to many people in different areas and walks of life. And so I'm excited to dive into that.
Yeah, absolutely. So recently you got a 10 unit and you're getting set up there. Can you give us a little bit of information on that? What did it look like? What kind of things are you doing at the unit to get it prepared for tenants?
It was a severely undermanaged, self-managed building for about 25 years. When we bought it, it was quite a project. We removed all the tenants and then redid each unit. We're kind of on the tail end of all of that, and self-managing. It was definitely a project, a six-figure rehab, and the entire exterior, the entire interior, just about everything about the property was redone. And it's been a journey, and we're getting there towards the end.
Yeah. How'd you end up finding that property?
It was a referral from somebody in our network, and they knew our reputation. That's, I think, something that we're going to talk on today, especially with, you know, higher interest rates and property values still being pretty high, is the value of kind of being in the industry for a period of time and having a reputation, because ultimately that's what's going to lead to more deals and better deals, and you being able to do things when things do get tougher in the industry. And ultimately we get a lot of those because we have a tremendous reputation. It's always reputation over deal and money. And that's very important to us. We'll touch a little bit more on that, but that's ultimately how we found this one.
Finding a deal like that and some of the deals you found in the past are a testament to having a great track record, knowing the right people, and being in the game long enough to find those opportunities, recognize them, and have them come to you. One of the ways we believe the best way to get started doing that is by house hacking, right? It's a low barrier to entry, low down payment. It's very low risk. You're owner occupying. So if you can't find tenants, you're going to be able to pay for that property anyways, assuming that you can afford that mortgage. So no tenants, you're just back to paying rent anyways. Tenants, you're living rent free and you can prepare for the next property.
For sure. And I think one of the things that you have to start with when you consider this, if somebody's just considering it, or maybe they've read a few books, listened to a few podcasts on the idea, been sitting on the sidelines, is start with what would a traditional investor have to do to buy the same house, right? So right now with interest rates rising, they're probably at 25% down. They're probably at 8.5% interest, maybe more. I have seen a lot of people on home equity line of credits. They're a prime plus some points to get that. It's quite expensive and quite a large amount of money for an investor to buy a 2 or 3 or 4 unit. Now more than ever, with the mortgage products we have for people that live in the property or first time home buyers, it's a tremendous opportunity for them to take advantage of that and start to build that reputation. But it's going to take time and it's going to take consistency.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a 5% down loan. I mean, this is a big advantage because historically through Fannie Mae and buying single family properties, it's a lot easier to buy repeat single family properties that you own or occupy compared to multifamily, because one of our loans that we would go to is FHA, right? But when you already own a property and you're not meeting some of these, I would say, criteria to get a second FHA loan, it's going to be a lot difficult to get another property, get a second FHA loan. Even if you already have a conventional loan, going into a second property with an FHA is challenging.
It has a tremendous amount of overlays on what they consider to be what they'll lend on. And so as we all probably know in our markets, most properties that have been rentals for more than a few years, say 10 years or 20 years, you're buying from a landlord that's been a landlord for 10 or 20 years, that property is going to have some deferred maintenance. And that's just kind of the reality of buying an older multifamily property. And it's been challenging for, number one, FHA buyers to be even considered by sellers, but number two, to actually get the mortgage through. So ultimately, for those that are preparing themselves, it's a tremendous opportunity for them to buy something at 5% down and get into a property, not have to worry about the repairs needed for FHA, and actually be considered by these sellers to sell the property. So I think it's a great overall win for these house hackers.
Yeah, it's a huge upgrade too, because it used to be 15 to 25% down when you're looking at like 2 to 4 units with this loan. I know we've heard, and I've talked to people who've done 5% down on a duplex using this conventional loan. But from what I understand, there's some income requirements. And if your income's too high, you can't qualify for it. And it's pretty hard to find. Typically, what you see is the 15%. So if you get lucky enough, you can find the 5% before. But 3 to 4 units, I mean, it was 20% plus. So 5% down now, it's huge. That's a huge, huge upgrade.
For sure. And as, I mean, my wife and I still do this, and we did back then have to do 20% down on conventional, even on our second one. It could be challenging. I know we did it in a previous podcast, but essentially what we had to do is we bought it on a short-term land contract, improve the property, and then use the new equity as the 20% down payment. That's how we did it back then. But so there was ways to do it and be creative. But ultimately, if you're trying to find a property and get into it, this is a tremendous product for buyers.
Absolutely. But what about mortgage rates? I mean, mortgage rates are at a high since like what, the last 20, 30 years. Should you really look at buying a house to house hack with these high mortgage rates? So that's the question that I think a lot of people are asking themselves.
Sure. So I think about this question more than anything, probably in different ways, not just house hacking, but maybe investing, maybe from the perspective of somebody just looking to buy a traditional home to raise their family in. And what I typically always go back to is like, what is the reason to do something? Why are you doing it? Right. So if you're a traditional investor and you have a house, you live out of state, you're buying somewhere, timing can be an important decision maker, right? Like you might not want to buy with historic interest rates when you're just trying to get a traditional buy and hold. If you're a house hacker and you have hopes or interests in being in this industry for a long period of time, it's my opinion that as you buy, there's going to be good and bad times to do several different things, right? When interest rates are low, like we saw in 2020 and 2021, it was impossible for an FHA house hacker to get a nice duplex. Why? Because the cash buyers and the high conventional borrowers who didn't need an appraisal or waived the inspection or whatever it might be, they won all of those highest and best bidding wars. Now that we're seeing less of the bidding wars, interest rates are higher, right? So there's always going to be a positive and negative to every market. There's going to be people that win and lose in every market. My opinion is the fact that you're living there and you're cutting your living expense, if you're renting for $1,500 to $2,000 a month, and you can go into a project and have your mortgage payment be just $1,000 a month because the other side is covering a good majority of your $2,000 mortgage payment. That's a win for you. And you got into a property and you're learning the ropes and you're going to build equity over time. Maybe not in a 3 or 5 year stretch, maybe not, but certainly in a 20 year stretch. So it's really, it goes back to like, what's the purpose of doing this? And am I doing this to build that reputation and build that consistency?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at it on a long-term lens, right, is the mortgage rate really going to matter? Especially when you're house hacking, there's still going to be good house hacking deals. They're going to reduce your rent rate, get you a property, get you investing early, learning how to manage properties, building your track record like we talked about later or earlier. And you always have the option to refinance, right? If mortgage rates go down again, you can refinance. I refinanced when mortgage rates were at an all-time low or however long that was. I mean, rates were like 3%. I refinance and it's great. I'm holding a property at 3% interest rate, but that's going to come around and that's going to drop your payment significantly. I don't know if it's going to get that low, but what if it gets to 5%? A 3% drop in rate is huge when you refinance.
For sure. For sure. So, I mean, it all comes back to what's the reason for doing it. And so do I really think that one of my specialties right now is new construction and development. That's what I spend the majority of my time in. And I don't think there's anyone in that industry that feels that labor and material are going to have any kind of drastic downward trend anytime soon. Even when materials do come down, like lumber prices, for instance, lumber prices have come back down from their highs and they come back down to kind of more reasonable rates. Concrete has doubled in price. Shingles have doubled in price. So it's like we don't see any significant decrease in how much it costs to build a house, which puts upward pressure on the bottom end of the market. The lower end homes. And so I don't know that we're going to be able to find duplexes, for instance, at super bargain prices. Will they come down? Sure. Will they come down maybe a 10 or 20%? Some people say they might. Maybe they do. But to me, if your reasoning to get into house hacking is to start this journey towards financial independence or being a true investor and building a portfolio, I would consider the current environment much less than if I were a traditional investor putting 25% down. And the reason I say that is kind of my journey, right? Like for those that remember, I mean, the very first one I did, I lost every penny I put into it. I lost the house, gave it back to the land bank. The second house did mediocre at the third house. Interest rates were higher back then. I think it was a did FHA 203K loan. It was somewhere in like the 6.5 range, which was high back then. And it was the same kind of thought periods that we had now. It's like, man, interest rates are too high. Home prices are too high. It was all the same type of talk as it was right now, because that was kind of the time period of a election cycle and all that kind of stuff in 2016. And so the point is, like, you're always going to have problems in the current market. And to me, like, it's just the consistency more than anything personally for you, the consistency of being diligent in whatever it is you set out to do, in this case, real estate investing, that's going to pay higher dividends than what the interest rate is going to be right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's experience, right? You're getting experience and then you're learning what's the difference between a high interest rate market. Then if rates come down, you're going to learn what the difference is in a low interest rate market. And you're going to learn about the different markets when you're involved more than when you're reading about them. Because you're not going to get the full picture on what your specific market is doing when these trends happen. And to your point, I mean, it's not like the common conception is that high rates are going to bring down prices and low rates are going to increase prices. And typically the low rates do increase prices, but based on what you're saying of construction costs and the cost to build a home, it doesn't sound like that the high rates are really going to bring down prices that much, if at all.
It's tough. I'm not smart enough to really weigh in on that. I mean, I read a lot and I understand the push points of each particular aspect of the real estate economy, but I don't pretend to try and know what 2024, 2025, 2026 hold for us. But what I do know is we'll never be able to produce the $100,000 or $200,000 house again in building costs. I know in some markets they're exponentially more than that, but like for us, which is a Metro Detroit market, median sales price of $350,000, give or take. I mean, we can't build a house for less than even a really small basic house, less than $300,000. We just can't. And then if you're looking at a average home, 2,000 square feet, you're looking at $500,000 or $600,000. And then it goes up from there, of course, right? And so that's really, I think, more than anything, driving the demand, because we can't match that demand with affordable housing anymore. Things just cost too much to build it. So that's how I look at it now that I a little bit more perspective. It's just that if I wanted to go replicate a duplex, even if I was trying to do just bare bones and I met all of my requirements in my area, it'd be $300,000 minimum to build that thing. And that's building the barest of bones property. So anyways, it gives perspective to trying to buy that house, that duplex for 250 or 350 or 450 that you can't replicate for that price.
Is that land included or is that just the cost of the build?
Honestly, it's too broad of a question. What I'm saying is too broad of a question. Where are you actually building? What are the actual requirements? What are they going to do for a minimum living square footage? So each jurisdiction has their own. It'd be all speculation, right? To your point, land can cost 200 grand, land can cost 20 grand, depending on where you're building that same type of property. So anyway, it's a very broad and theoretical question, but the point is, no matter where it is, you can't build that same house for what you're buying it for.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So what are some of the things, say someone dives into house hacking and they're already house hacking, what are some like skills or things that they can really drill down on to really building that track record, increasing reputation, and preparing to expand outward?
To me, it's really just one thing. It's focus and it's consistency. And those are two tough things to do. But like what took me to the next level is when I quit having shiny object syndrome, right? I mean, I remember the days of cryptocurrencies. I think if I remember correctly, it might have peaked in 16 or 17 the first time when Bitcoin really became really big. And then probably in like 2019, maybe when it went back up to whatever 40,000-50,000. I don't really pay attention at all to that much anymore, but I'm sure there are people that obviously make a tremendous amount of money in that industry. And if that's what you really want to do, fantastic. But for me, I told myself, I want to be a real estate professional. That's what I want to be. That's what I want to be known for. And I want to do this for 50 years because it excites me. And so when I had that singular focus, that's when I was able to kind of forget about all the minutia of interest rates at the time. Our property value is too high. I've been hearing that argument for 10 years now, almost. Our property value is too high. And so it's like, okay, I mean, maybe they are at the time, maybe they aren't at the time. I'm not smart enough to figure that out. I'm just going to figure out how to be consistent and buy good deals that the market gives you. So
yeah, it's important to stay focused. And when you're getting started out, I mean, you want to focus on that, getting that first deal, right? You don't have to have your next 30, 40 years completely figured out, even if you want to be full-time in real estate or if you want to do it on the side. Let's just focus on getting that first deal. And what are some of the things that you kind of see, Brad, when you're looking at a property that already has tenants and you're trying to owner occupy? What are things that our listeners should really look for or key in on to know what to do? I mean, sometimes you inherit tenants, sometimes you find empty properties, but I think the inheriting tenants one is where there's some gray area.
Yeah. So due diligence on the property, kind of trying to, as you're starting to search, you like the idea of house hacking, you get over the fact the interest rate's going to be higher and you start to narrow down on, okay, what are we focusing on? I think the way that we evaluate house hacking properties is a little bit different than maybe a lot of the books and things that people are going to read, because property values are just higher than rents are now, especially if you're going into decent areas. So I guess it depends on what's most important to you. Is it lifestyle? Is it going into some of the areas where the home value is a little bit higher? Or is it really cash flow and that sort of thing? But there's kind of a fine line in those maybe C+, B- properties where you can kind of still try and do both. But it's definitely a fine line. So once you start to narrow down what you're actually looking for, what's the goal? Are you trying to break even? Are you trying to actually cash flow while you live there? Or is it more of a long-term play where it's like, okay, I'm going to move in, lower my expenses. When I move out is when I actually cash flow. That's typically how I would tell somebody to evaluate a property, like a duplex, a 3-unit, a 4-unit, is put yours as market rent. So if market rent in your area is $1,500 a unit, and you get a 3-unit, and you know, so it's $4,500 a month, and your mortgage payment with tax and insurance is $3,200 a month. You have some additional expenses maybe, but there's that cash flow, right? And so that's kind of how I think you should evaluate it. And so it's more of a long-term play. Maybe you have a mortgage payment that you have to pay out of pocket. Like that's what we do right now. I mean, we live in a duplex and we still obviously pay a good portion, about 45% a month for our side. And so, anyways, you have to kind of evaluate that. And then next step is, what is the current situation with each tenant as far as lease? Is you have to have at least one that is month to month or nearing the end of their lease so that you can move in and owner occupy it. That is a requirement. And then the next step is, how long are the other leases for? From experience, myself and many investors that I have front row seat of helping, inheriting tenants is difficult. It's difficult to set new expectation with a tenant that's used to something else. So personally, I 100% prefer to just start over and mutually find solution with each tenant. Hey, you go find another place. I'll fix up the unit, find a new tenant, even though it's an upfront cost to you, because you're going to have to put some money into it, put some time into it, whatever that might be. Setting that new expectation is almost always what I have found to be the better solution. So there's that, but sometimes you can't. Sometimes you have someone that's got 6 months or more left on their lease. And so you just have to go in, you have to set the proper expectation, get a good lease, find a good local attorney to draft you a good lease, and go set that expectation, whatever that might be, whether it's smoking the building, whether it's just the ground rules of, listen, things aren't going to be the way that they were around here. Again, it's tough to speculate what that might be, but you just have to go in and set the right expectation. And then from there, you have to kind of figure out where you're at in the investing cycle. How familiar are you with problems? In my market, even the higher home value markets, any kind of duplex or 3-unit is going to have a good amount of deferred maintenance. It just is what it is. Landlords are in this to make as much amount of money as possible. And the small things like windows or those sort of things, that it's kind of a fine line between not being useful and just spending money to spend money. They're typically going to err on the side of, that window is fine. I know it's 30 years old. I know maybe it's got a seal broken, but I'm not going to spend $500 to get that window replaced. And those are the kind of things you have to decipher with a good inspector of what's a legitimate problem and what's a deferred maintenance. Because if your expectation is to not have any kind of deferred maintenance, it's going to be a real uphill battle to find anything. So that's kind of a good conversation to have with somebody, depending on, again, your experience level. But talking to somebody that has experience, whether that's a realtor, whether that's an inspector, whether that's another investor that has a lot of experience, to decipher what's an actual problem and what's something that 90% of my properties in my market are going to have, and as far as deferred maintenance stuff. Failing toilets, right? Failing wax rings on a toilet that's causing issues in the basement and subfloor. That's common. Landlords don't replace their toilet until they absolutely need to, right? Those sort of things, right? I'm just trying to point out, like, so you have to get a better understanding of what's important. And what I like to do is I like to put, here's the things in red that I need to do. Here's yellow. And here's some basic things that are TLC type thing. And yellow type things are the marginal stuff, like a toilet and a little subfloor issue, windows with seal problems or whatever it might be, flooring issues, paint, needing new kitchen cabinets. Like some of the things that are deferred maintenance type things. I'm buying a 50-year-old house. You have to kind of break it down into different sections. And then the beautiful thing about you living there is you kind of do it one at a time as you go, depending on what the problem is. So I would say those are the kind of expectation things that are important to do, important to have somebody in your corner to help you walk through it.
Yeah. One of the things I learned from you in regards to maintenance is you got to make sure the house is safe. You got to make sure it's clean and livable, right? And if you're meeting that criteria, there are going to be things like a cabinet door. Maybe it needs to be painted, whatever. That's going to be some kind of deferred maintenance that you can work on as you live in the property. So it's a lot easier to take on some of those maintenance tasks when you have tenants in there. So get it quality enough to get some tenants in, make it clean, safe, livable, use that income to take care of some of those small things as needed.
For sure. Yeah. And it's a marathon, not a sprint. And there's some wisdom to some landlords that have that discernment. There's obviously a fine line between picking and choosing what to you know, do and being sort of a slumlord and not putting money into properties. You have to figure out what's really important and what's, you know, acceptable in your market and making sure you still have quality housing for people. But at the end of the day, like there's going to be, I just like to set the expectation with anyone looking to get into this, you're going to have deferred maintenance if you're buying a place that's had a landlord there. And if you don't, then you should thank the person you're buying it from, because they're obviously phenomenal landlords if you're not getting a whole lot of maintenance issues. So that's sort of a definitely something you need to figure out right up front.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to circle back real quick because we were talking about inheriting tenants. And a lot of times what you'll see is people on month to month leases. So let's say you have a client who's going to buy a house and they're looking at a duplex. Both sides are filled with a tenant with month to month leases. How would you handle that situation?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to be an attorney, but I do have some experience with this, starting with that 10 unit we spoke of. We removed all the tenants as I spoke of. So to me, like I said, I prefer to start with new expectations. So the likelihood is you're buying it from somebody that has under market rents, probably. And so it's going to be a real challenge to go in and have that same tenant pay 50% more or 30% more than their current rent. And if they do, they're going to have some higher expectations now. Okay, if I'm going from 1,000 to 1,300 a month, I should be getting a better quality house because I'm paying more for it. So to me, I'd rather just sit down, have a conversation with them, say, here is your 30-day notice to quit. I'm not saying that I will file for eviction for you, but I'm just giving you this because this is my duty to do so if I choose to do it. But what I prefer to do is both of us leave here amicably, you find good housing, and I come in and redo the unit and find a new tenant. Typically, they're going to fight back and say, I'd rather stay here. And that's your time to decipher, is this somebody I do want to stay here? And if it is, I need to set new expectations. Here's a list of things that I consider problematic to live in. Here are some things I don't. Here are the things I'm going to do. Here are the things I'm not going to do. Hearing them out, what they think the problems are with the property, and then you deciphering at a later time. Don't do it on the spot, but you deciphering, if they give you 10 problems that they're having with the place, you decide which 10 you're going to do, which 10 you're not, on a follow-up talk. That's probably the biggest word of advice, is never make those kind of decisions right there in person. Give yourself some time to think about it. It's tough to say, right? Well, like who the tenant is and stuff, but you have to set new expectations and you have to not waver in that, which is tough being a new landlord, because obviously we're typically people and we want to help others and provide good housing, but people will take advantage of you if you get pushed around. So it's a fine line there. But to answer your question about month to month, definitely if there's gray area on what you're going to do, serve them with a 30-day notice to quit. That way you get the ball rolling, because you can't actually file until those 30 days are up, at least in my market in Michigan. But again, check with an eviction attorney to see if that's different in your market. But on the 31st day, you need to have a plan in place one way or the other. And they're almost always going to ask for an extension on that from experience. They're going to say, oh, yeah, no problem. I'll get out by, what's the day, October 10th. No problem. I'll be out by November 10th. By November 6th, they're saying, hey, can I have until the end of November? Because I got placed in December 1st. So you just have to have the proper solutions in place for those kind of situations. But always follow the rules. Always follow the lease. Even if you're going to be nice and lenient, still follow the lease up front as far as issuing 30-day notice to quits and being on top of it. And going from there.
Absolutely. Obviously, get copies of those leases before you make an offer and close on the house too, so you don't end up in something really sticky. Any closing thoughts?
No, I mean, just I'd love to hear from everyone, like what's most intriguing to them right now in this market. Like, what's stopping you, right? Like, how can we think through and reason through the concept of house hacking? How can we talk about what the current market brings? What are the troubles you're finding? Low inventory. If there's low inventory in the traditional housing market, there's even less inventory in the traditional house hacking method. So reach out with us what your questions are so we can kind of walk through that and try to answer your questions better.
Yeah. info@househackingsuccess.com is our email. So reach out there, or Instagram DMs are great too. House Hacking Success. We look forward to hearing from you.